This is a 3CR community radio podcast, and Psychedelia is broadcast every Sunday from 2 p.m. For more info on anything you hear in the show, head to 3cr.org.au and follow the links to the In Psychedelia program page.
Good afternoon and welcome to In Psychedelia on this rainy Sunday afternoon. Well, we're getting rain here in Melbourne, though New South Wales, it has some serious weather going on, some seriously hot weather going on. I think it was, I heard reports of like 47 degrees in the state's west, and a friend, or actually my partner's auntie, or one of those relations, cousin, I think, sent a picture from her dashboard in Sydney's west of the temperature being 49 degrees. Now, I think that might have been slightly influenced by the concrete. But thank you to Freedom of Species. They will be back next week from 1 p.m. on 3CR, and you can check out their podcast and lots more information about the program at 3cr.org.au and follow the links to the program page. My name is Nick, and in the studio we have Ash from, the show and SSDP. I don't know what you've got. A few things now. You're a man multiple of many hats. Of many hats. And Penny from SSDP Australia. How you doing, Pen?
Hello, I'm good.
Now you've got family in Sydney.
I do. I'm from Sydney. Hi there. They said it's very, very hot.
Very hot.
I don't know. I spoke to my mum this morning. She was whinging about it.
I didn't
take that much notice of what she was saying. But I love you, Mum. I don't know if she listens.
Oh, maybe so. Just trying to, I had this wonderful little speech thing that I was going to say, and it's not in my folder, so there you go. On the program today, the Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We'll be hearing a lot from SSDP Australia, who are gearing up. Hey, when's your birthday, by the way? When's SSDP's birthday? Do you have an official birthday? Because it must be around now.
Yeah, well, I guess first week, O week, Deakin last year was the beginning of March.
Yeah, right. Or otherwise.
Or before, because we kind of got together.
It was kind of like the meeting of me and Penny, where we started kind of working together, was the screening of the Drug Lord documentary. So,
Drug
at the
Lord.
End
that
of
was
2015.
Yeah.
So
it's like
December
or something.
Drug Lord.
What I'm trying to say is that it's around SSDP Australia's first birthday. Congratulations, happy birthday. And
thank you.
A lot on the plate for this year, and we're going to be hearing a bit about that in the show coming up. Also, as usual, music, and we are going to get stuck right into some news, because we haven't covered the news in a couple of weeks. It's been a busy couple of weeks. It's time.
And Psychedelia News of the Week.
I don't condone or advocate that everyone should use illicit drugs. I think it's a huge decision made with the right amount of research and forethought.
The intention is to discourage ICE use. The actual effect is it encourages the stigmatization of people who use this drug. The risk there is people are less likely to disclose their use, even when they're experiencing some issues, so they're less likely to access essential health services. The potential for harm increases.
People feel hesitant to be open about who they are because they're afraid of judgment from family members or people at work or just people in society in general.
Many of them have conservative mindsets regardless of their politics, and will just say, oh well, then the government are not looking after us, and therefore it seems a law and order issue rather than a social problem that needs to be dealt with on a public health
basis. Drug news from Melbourne and around the world.
The iron law of prohibition is a term which posits that as law enforcement becomes more intense, the potency of prohibited substances increases. Researcher Richard Cowan put it this way: the harder the law enforcement, the harder the drugs. This is the cardinal rule of prohibition, and it is a powerful argument for the legalization of drugs. It's based on the premise that when drugs or alcohol are prohibited, they will be produced by black markets in more concentrated and powerful forms, because these more potent forms offer better efficiency in the business model. They take up less space in storage, less weight in transport, and they sell for more money. Economist Mark Thornton writes that the iron law of prohibition undermines the argument in favour of prohibition because the higher potency forms are less safe for the consumer. That's from Wikipedia. Thanks, Wikipedia.
This Tuesday saw medical cannabis activists and advocates from around the country descend upon Canberra for a rally demanding an end to the raids on suppliers, amnesty for people using and providing medical cannabis products, and basically a rethink of the way that the system's being run. There's ongoing concern amongst the medical cannabis community about access and about the legal threats that have been brought against people that are kind of trying to work around the tightly regulated system to get what's essentially looking like essential medicine to people that really need it.
Penny.
Kind of bringing up what's been happening in Melbourne lately with the police not being supportive of an early warning system and making public health announcements around different drugs. An article's just come out this week from the Taiwan News saying that ecstasy being disguised as plum powder in southern Taiwan is in Taiwan, and that the police have gone... use social media to warn youth to be aware of this plum powder laced with ecstasy. So pretty disappointing that the Victorian police don't feel like they're able to... What did you say on the way here? They're not able to... people don't understand. If they made a public health announcement, they wouldn't understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, my stance on it... we're talking about an internal document that was released by Victoria Police where they actually identified the substances implicated in the accidental poisoning from mislabeled, missold, represented drugs in Chapel Street a few weeks back. And they didn't think it was appropriate to sort of share this information with health professionals or the general public. And they defended this decision by saying that it could confuse people, which, you know, my stance on that is that's extremely patronizing. Drug users probably know a bit more about drugs than most police.
Of Victoria Police to put that out and think that that is an acceptable argument. Highly cynical, because I think it sort of relies on this caricature, this stereotype of a dumb drug user, of just like rampant hedonists. And I think that's just really poor form.
So it's exciting to see at least the Taiwan police are warning young people about different drugs and where they're coming about. So,
back to Canberra. Now, I'm not sure if this was the same one, but the Nimbin Hemp Embassy organised a protest in Canberra this week with 20 protesters holding green balloons and calling for the legalisation of cannabis, especially homegrown cannabis. The Northern Star reported that the Hemp Embassy President Michael Balderstone said that Senator Darren Hinch was in full support for legalising marijuana, and that he's going to be attending Nimbin Mardi Gras to be held Friday the 5th of May until Sunday the 7th of May. For more information on Mardi Gras, head to nimbinmardigras.com.
That's quite interesting. Senator Lionhelm was also in attendance, and I imagine these were sort of several rallies happening in conjunction with each other, I would imagine.
A week of cannabis, it seems, yeah.
Yeah, and Senator Lionhelm was, you know, out there supporting people's rights and obviously in opposition to the raids. And I'm not sure which senator it was, but I did notice on one of the medical cannabis users groups that a senator, not named, was calling for people to send in their stories of raids and things that had happened like that had potentially impacted, like, not just people's general welfare like a normal raid would, but their supply of medicine and, you know, the severe impacts that could have.
And we'll keep our eye on that issue in the coming weeks.
To the Philippines, where everyone, I'm sure, is aware of President Duterte's horrible kind of campaign for extrajudicial killings. There's been some interesting things happening this week, as they usually are. He's come out calling the ex-Colombian president an idiot when he came out and warned Duterte that a security-centered approach will do more harm than good in his community. So he's come out to that by saying that the ex-president's an idiot. He has...
That seems his modus operandi, though.
Yeah, and more interestingly, there's actually been a survivor of one of the drug raids taking the police to court. So it's unusual to, I think, survive some of the drug raids that are happening there, and this man, Mr. Murillo, has come out And provided an account that challenges the idea that people are being killed or the police are acting in self-defense. And his testimony has said none of the people had any weapons, any drugs anywhere near them, and they were just all shot. So it's a first-hand account. Really horrible to hear, but really nice that he's made it to court and this has come out in public.
And crossing to Myanmar, also in Southeast Asia, Myanmar, it's a majority Buddhist nation, but it also sits in the Golden Triangle, one of Southeast Asia's main producers and distributors of opiates, heroin in particular. But with that comes a lot of other black market interests, so there's quite a big trade through this region. Sometimes religion and the drug trade inevitably cross paths. Sometimes inevitably. I'm not sure if that's an oxymoron there. But monks Asara, a respected leader of a monastery, was busted while driving towards the Bangladesh border by members of Myanmar's anti-drug task force, who had received an anonymous tip that he was carrying some drugs. And it turned out that he was transporting some 400,000 methamphetamine tablets, as well as hundreds of dollars worth of local currency in his car. The police then visited Asara's monastery and discovered another 4.2 million pills, along with a grenade and some other ammunition. The pills would be worth more than $4 million on the street, according to Vice, who reported on this story. The monk will be stripped of his monkhood and trialed as a citizen.
I think he's actually a citizen of Bangladesh.
Ah.
Staying in the region, in Cambodia, the Cambodian Prime Minister has pledged on Wednesday to intensify a campaign against drugs after the recent arrest of more than 2,400 people for drug-related offences. He has said that, in the Philippines they're ordering for killings they won't be doing in this Cambodia. They won't be doing this in Cambodia, and we hope he sticks to his word on that.
Crossing back to Australia, in Western Australia, the forensic lab Chem Centre has raised concerns about the recent growing availability and apparent popularity, although I'm sure that that's not a intentional thing, it's probably more likely that's what's on the market, of the strong opioid fentanyl. The drug has been associated with a number of deaths in WA and across the world. Fentanyl is active in much, much smaller doses than heroin. I think it might even be in the milligrams or micrograms, much smaller than heroin, which can lead some who are regular heroin users, if they're suspecting, to use the same substance. And this is the sort of things we're talking about when this happens in the market. Then they end up taking something that's much stronger, And can lead to overdose and can lead to death, as it has done. Chem Centre also expressed concerns over the variety of novel psychoactive substances out there, but noted that what they're detecting at the moment has slowed. So the number of new substances that they're seeing on the market has slowed down. But fentanyl is one. Another one that really, this is an argument for, I mean, I want to say testing of drugs, but really, The better thing would be just to prescribe heroin, as it's done in some nations, like in Canada, like in where else is heroin prescribed?
Switzerland.
Because then people get the exact thing that they know what it is. They get the support. They get a support network around them to try and if that's something that they want to stop doing, then they've got people around them that they can that can help them, rather than ending up with fentanyl from some dodgy dealer and overdosing.
Yeah, it's really difficult. Fentanyl often comes in the patches that you get. And it's really difficult to know, for people to know how, because they're so concentrated, how many pieces they need to cut the patches into, and how to extract the fentanyl from the patch. So people don't often know how much they've extracted. There's a really good resource through the AIVL, AIVL website, for anybody that is using fentanyl, on how to know about the concentration.
A comprehensive study has been released into cannabis, and it was reported in the Northern Territory News, which was an interesting place for that to end up on.
Have you seen
some
of their headlines?
I have indeed. And it sort of covers, like, it's really hard with cannabis to sort the myth from the reality, because there's a bit of hyperbole on all sides, I think, when it comes to cannabis. So some of the findings that it comes out is that cannabis does not increase the risk that it does not increase the risk of certain cancers, such as lung, head, neck cancers, that kind of thing. But there's modest evidence, you know, kind of inconclusive, that it's associated with one particular subtype of testicular cancer.
Balls.
balls.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. There's minimal evidence that parental cannabis use during pregnancy is associated with greater cancer risk in offspring. Smoking cannabis on a regular basis is associated with chronic cough and phlegm production. I can attest for that. It is unclear whether cannabis use is associated with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And then just going into some of the medical benefits. In adults with chemotherapy-induced nausea, oral cannabinoids are effective. In adults with chronic pain, who were treated with cannabis or cannabinoids, were more likely to experience a clinically significant reduction in pain symptoms. Also good for multiple sclerosis-related spasticity. And a couple of other things. Going on to mental health, there is a a likely increase in the risk of developing schizophrenia and other psychoses. Usually that's associated with high prolonged chronic use, just to be clear about that one. And, you know, a couple of other things. We'll post a link to the more comprehensive details of that. But it's, you know, it's good that the research is coming out and people are trying to sort out what's true and what's not when it comes to both the benefits and the risks of cannabis
use. And
that's
the important thing. But maybe just another like addendum to this little asterisk above this is that something about Australian culture and smoking cannabis usually means that tobacco is involved as well. I suspect that research is probably trying to not look at the effect of cannabis and tobacco smoked together. And tobacco, as we know, is associated with various cancers.
That's right. It doesn't mean if you smoke a joint that's mixed with tobacco, that applies. All the tobacco risks still apply.
I'd like to think that we are going to see the end of smoking at some point soon, not because of the wonderful work of public health paternalists who think that we should all just be abstinent from this dirty, disgusting habit, but because there is technology now that people can use to try and stop that from happening. But in the past 2 weeks, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, made a decision about a proposal for nicotine to be regulated for the use in e-cigarettes. The proposal was put forward by a number of advocates for vaping, including doctors and professionals that are working alongside people who struggle with tobacco addiction. And the TGA denied the request with a fairly stock standard list of unknowns, basically. The TGA has been terribly conservative on this, and I think we see strange contradictions across all drug policy, but here we're seeing the sale of tobacco is wide. In fact, you can go probably wherever you're sitting right now, within 500 metres of you. If you're not in the suburbs, maybe I'm being exaggerating. If you're in the city, 500 metres of you, you've probably got somewhere and 1 kilometre. Look, I'm going to change my radius all the time. Point is, you can get tobacco very easily. To get nicotine for an e-cigarette, you need to go to a doctor, you need to get a prescription, and they're unlikely to give it to you because they'll likely push you towards nicotine replacement therapies such as patches, such as the gum and these sorts of things, because those are the approved medications for getting off smoking. This is what's happened. So nicotine still not available for commercial sale for the use in personal vaporizers. A lot of people still do it because either they're misinformed or they don't care. But it's one of these strange areas of drug policy where, or from the best efforts of our public health professionals, and I feel sometimes a little bit cynical about what they're doing, but I understand that they, people generally do care. People generally do want to do the best for other people and help out. And I think that there is this abstinence mentality that comes from a good place. Remember what the road to hell is paved with, though. But it comes from this good place where it's looking out for, protecting the health of individuals. But what it ends up doing is telling them what they can and can't do. Somebody else's mind is going to be like, well, I actually, maybe they like smoking, or maybe they like something about it. And vaporizers have been a very effective way to manage that for people.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in the public health discussion around tobacco in particular. It's recognized in other areas that harm reduction is a useful, beneficial, and necessary tool for public health. But it seems like when it comes to nicotine, there's just not that same level of recognition in like the health area, which is it's a very strange thing to me.
I do wonder sometimes how much of the tobacco industry's rampant efforts to cover up even the slightest hint that tobacco might actually be bad for you in the 1970s and previously, whether that has left a sour taste in the mouths of those who are learning public policy coming through university. They're probably learning this stuff as a case study of the kinds of sinister marketing actions that these and PR actions that these companies do and these industries do to try and hide from any harms. But I don't think anybody can now say that they don't know that tobacco is harmful. So where's the line? I feel like there's a line somewhere where, yes, people are informed. And if you keep pushing, like some organizations, which are calling for an outright prohibition of tobacco, I've heard one good example is in Tasmania. They're currently conducting an inquiry into e-cigarettes. Smoke-free Tasmania is calling for a prohibition that starts from when you were born from a certain year. So, say if it was 2000, if you were born in the year 2000, then you're not allowed to buy tobacco. Anyone before then can, but after that. And thinking that that's some kind of solution and not the beginning of a new black market in tobacco and new stigma and new ostracization. And there's a line. There's a line, and I think we're crossing it.
Indeed.
I'm sure are we going to go back to speaking about the support for the injecting centre in North Richmond?
Yes.
Or are we going to speak about it now?
Well, actually, no, let's talk about the injecting centre now.
Well,
because
I just wanted to bring
news.
Up, I wanted to bring up some news internationally that just this week, Canada has approved three new injecting centres in the state, oh no, it's not a state, territory of, is it called a territory? Quebec. And also there's been support for consumption rooms to open up in Ireland just this week as well. So it's not just in Melbourne that more support is being seen, but it is the Irish and Canadian governments that have come out saying that they would definitely be opening consumption rooms. So, yeah, why don't we start having a chat about
it? I think they're looking at it in Seattle in the US as well.
Mm.
So it's definitely a worldwide thing.
Yeah, a new consumption room just opened in France late last year.
And we're talking about this, of course, you've probably seen in the news over the past week, a big push for a safe injecting centre in the Richmond area. If you've ever driven down or walked down Victoria Street, the drug market is quite blatant and quite obvious there. I was actually driving past just yesterday. That was when I was stuck in traffic down that street. Don't drive down Victoria Street if you want to get somewhere quick. And there was an obvious drug deal happening like right outside the window, right in front of like Safeway or something like that. And it happens all the time. I'm not saying that. I mean, yeah, people don't want to see that. People, a lot of people who don't understand that don't. There's a lot of trouble down there. That's the point. And the Safe Injecting Centre, as evidenced by various ones around the world, but also in Sydney at the King's Cross area, what it does is it stops. It can stop a lot of the street trade. It can move people into somewhere where they're going to get support.
There's a lot lower risk of overdose. I think the amount of ambulance call-outs that occurred in Sydney after the injecting centre opened was reduced by 80%. No person has ever died from an overdose in a drug consumption room anywhere in the world, and there's over 90 throughout the world. So,
and I think another point here is that a lot of people who are against this idea are against it because it's like in their heads, if you do something about it, then it's like you're saying it exists.
Mm.
So if you don't do anything about it, then you can either pretend it doesn't exist or be incredibly antagonistic towards those who it is a problem for, and you can just imagine this evil caricature of this dirty, grandma robbing drug fiend and go, oh, well, you know, obviously that person's a bad guy. You know, when you're working in caricatures in your mind, you can make anybody the good guy and bad guy, but the reality is quite different, and you can go and find that out. There will be a number of public forums that are going to be run by the Yarra Drug and Health Forum over the coming weeks as well. The website is ydhf.org.au, and they're going to be happening all around to try and answer some of those concerns that members of the public might have.
Yeah, I mean, like classic opposition of injecting rooms and needle syringe programs are that, oh, we think they're a good idea, but we don't want them in our area. Like, it's going to bring more people injecting drugs into our area, and there's a reason that we want to put it in North Richmond.
Yeah.
That's because that's where people already are.
Yeah, exactly. And there has been a lot of movement on the Safe Injecting Centre. I believe there is a bill before Parliament from Fiona Patten from the Australian Sex Party on legalising or making it possible to run a trial. I think it was an 18-month
trial.
There's a number of petitions out there at the moment. I think the Greens have a petition going calling for a safe injecting centre.
Yeah, you can find that one at supervisedinjectingrichmond.org.au if you want to sign that petition.
Highly recommend it. The more voices, the merrier. And
we're going to have a petition at O-Week for students to sign up. So.
And it's just one of those things that it's almost like low-hanging fruit. Like, we really should be able to, like, nail this one in the, you know, just, and it's done. And we can see the results once it's done. But both Matthew Guy, the leader of the opposition, and Daniel Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, have come out against it. I think Matthew Guy's statements were something like, oh, in this time of law and order upheaval, making out like there's, you know, just crime everywhere because of the bloody Herald Sun reporting on the bunch of kids at the Parkdale Centre. They've sort of blown it up into the world is falling apart and the sky is falling in. And he said, no, I don't think we need to talk about that right now. I don't think he quite understands that it's not about a law and order issue. It's a health issue. How many times do we need to tell these people? We're probably just about out of time for news, unless you've got one more, Penny.
I think I'm good.
There are a few psychedelic stories up there. There was some interesting research this week, especially around LSD and how it binds to receptors in the brain. But I won't get stuck into that. We'll save that for another week when we get Dean Wright, who has a PhD in neuroscience and can pull these things apart a bit better for us. Dean's from the Australian Psychedelic Society, and he'll talk to us a little bit about that. Right now... we've got some music from Griff, and coming up shortly, we're going to be hearing from the Students for Sensible Drug Policy. This is Griff with Missing Pages on In Psychedelia, 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, digital and streaming at the website 3cr.org.au.
I am embarrassed. We are all embarrassed. We have guided our destiny so clumsily that we must now protect ourselves against our own government and our own industries. If we let them, they will kill everything on this lovely blue-green planet. With their rebuttals to what we say here today, with their vicious, stupid lies.
Missing Pages on In Psychedelia, 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM Digital, and streaming at the website, 3cr.org.au. Coming up at the end of the year is the Entheogenesis Australis 2017 conference, an outdoor conference of global standards, and they have announced an outstanding first round of international headline speakers, including Rick Doblins from the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, Kathleen Harrison from Botanical Dimensions, Eric Davis from Technosis, that's with a G, Thomas Roberts, who is a professor working in the humanities and psychedelics in the US, Ben Sessa, who studies, I can't remember right now, James Orrock, David Nichols from the DMT Nexus Forums, and Jennifer Dumpet. There are 500 tickets available, so it's going to be very limited. Entheo.net is the place that you want to go. And also, applications are now open for those who might want to present at the EGA conference, and you can find those again at the website, entheo.net. Go find them there.
Oh, no.
Freeze, fellas, you're under arrest.
What do I do?
Call a lawyer?
Hello, Fitzroy Legal Service. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you are arrested, you should make a no-comment interview.
A no-comment interview?
Yeah.
Well, how do I do that?
You say...
No comment!
To everything?
Yes, except your name and address. Every other question you should answer with no comment.
So if he asks me what colour my shoes are, I say no comment.
Yes, you say...
No comment!
To everything?
Yes, say...
No comment!
If you are arrested, exercise your right to contact a lawyer and say no comment. Fitzroy Legal Service, proudly supporting 3CR.
Hi, my name's Sarah. I love coming here because they offer vegan food. Hi, my name's Paul. This is my first time at Friends of the Earth. I think it's really awesome and the food's great, really healthy and nutritious. La, 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 la,
la, la, la, la. Friends of the Earth Food Co-op, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood. A tuneful experience.
A 3CR supporter.
Hi, this is Ash from SSDP Australia, talking to some people at the SSDP Australia Training and Resource Distribution Day. And sitting next to me is...
This is Joshua Bryars here. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. So, which university are you from?
I'm from this very university, Swinburne University in Hawthorne, Victoria, because it's a great place.
And what got you interested in drug policy?
I did really mention the group earlier. I had... a very personal relation. So my dad is a former drug addict. I lost a friend to misnomered MDMA, so it wasn't MDMA. I a sociology student. I particularly like the sociology of health and how we interact with each other. So obviously drugs are a big part of that. And it's sort of been a bit of a journey for me, because I have to go from a place of they're all bad, and I've made that journey from it's all bad, you can't take it, to being, and I don't mind saying a user. I said that during a federal election campaign, to using some drugs, and being like, okay, some of them are okay, to actually accepting that, well, there's context to all of it, so I shouldn't be judging people for what they're doing. So, yeah, that's probably why I'm a bit interested.
Awesome. Yeah, you said federal election campaign. You're involved with politics, are you?
Yes, I am. I am currently the convener/... The other word would be president that Liberal and Labor use for the Young Greens of Victoria. I was a federal election candidate in 2016 for the seat of Deakin. I've been on the state executive. I work with the MPs. It's great fun.
That's amazing. And what do you hope to get out of being involved with SSDP this year?
It's sort of a synthesis between stuff that's going on in the political world, stuff that's going on in my academic world, and stuff that's going on in the advocacy world. Excuse me. And... I think it really... I'm a big believer that you can't look at life in small, little pocketed circumstances. It's not a circumstantial thing. It's a huge group of things that all affect the circumstance that you're in. So I think ignoring stuff like drug policy, which I will happily say that every government in Australia has ignored drug policy, and to the fact that they have attended to it in a way that is malicious, harmful and not good for the community... and actually look at that and go, well, that's not right. Why isn't it right? And hopefully change laws around that.
Dean from?
La Trobe University. My interest in SSDP is sort of drawn from classical liberal values. So I have sort of an appreciation for individual rights and control over one's own body. And I think it just sort of makes sense that people will be able to have a lot more control over what they're doing and what they're choosing to do with their own body.
And how did you find out about SSDP and get interested in getting involved?
So I actually found out about SSDP through the Liberal Democratic Party. So that's a party that I attend the meetings for, but I sort of spread out amongst a bunch of different political parties. But that's sort of the key focus from my angle, is just individual choice. And there's a focus on the right side of politics that's been ignored for a lot of the discussion when it comes to drugs, and that is that the huge economic impact of the war on drugs. It costs a lot, and it cuts out a lot of room for drugs sales and entrepreneurship, marketing. There's a whole spate of business that's being ignored because of the war on drugs.
Cool. And you got anything in particular you want to get out of being involved this year?
So I'm starting up the La Trobe chapter this year, so it's a small chapter. So mostly what we're doing is just building it up. We want to find out a lot more about how we can get involved with the larger organisation, the Australia-wide SSDP. And personally, what I want to do is sort of inject different perspectives, because that classical liberal perspective, I think, is a very different one from a lot of the other views that are currently being expressed on drug policy.
Hey, so I'm Yen, and I'm from Monash Uni.
And how did you find out about SSDP and get interested in drug policy?
Oh, so how I found out about SSDP, it's actually a fun story. So I was literally having a chat with the welfare officers from my uni last year, and we were just like literally talking about protesting and stuff like that. Then 1 week later, I see in like Stalker Space or something, like, oh, Melbourne Uni protesting program. And I was like, oh shit, let's have a look more at this. It was like SSDP. It's like, let's get involved with them.
Yeah, awesome. Great. Good work from the Melbourne chapter.
Yeah.
And what's your particular interest? Is it just around that pill testing issue?
Well, it's not just pill testing. Personally, I'm opposed to the war on drugs for like many reasons. It's just simply quite inefficient, illogical, and like it just infringes on our liberty and all. But just that, on a personal level, I was also being affected by and drug war policy. Like, I used to live on halls of residence at Monash, and I nearly got evicted last year because they launched an investigation at me for allegedly possessing drugs on regular. Now, there was no way for them to substantiate this claim, but yet they still came after me with, like, a passion. And trying to change that policy at my own local level at a university is part of a large bit of motivation for me to be involved with SSDP.
Nige from Vic Uni, how are you going?
Good, thank you. Yeah, Vic Uni, as you said. So we're attempting to start up a chapter this year. So that's my... I'm studying... I have been studying community service and community development. This year I'll be studying youth work and AOD, mental health. So combining it all, hopefully. So, yeah.
And how'd you find out about SSDP and get interested in the area more broadly?
Well, actually, a friend of mine, Nicole, was one of the instigators of SSDP, of starting it up at Vic Uni a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, so she got me interested, and yeah, I've just been interested from then.
Awesome. Old schooler. I remember going out to an event down at the old Vic Uni SSDP chapter. And what do you want to try and get out of being involved with SSDP at Vic Uni this year?
Well, like everyone else has said, the war on drugs is totally wrong. That's easy to say, but, you know, I find it just criminal what they're doing with the war on drugs at the moment. So, yeah, I just want to advocate for pill testing, for medical marijuana, for... safe injecting rooms, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I'm here with Nick Kent, the superstar chapter president from Melbourne Uni. You actually spoke at the Rainbow Serpent Festival. How did that go?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a really nice opportunity to speak about the program that we've had trying to get running up at uni, and to speak alongside some really distinguished experts and guests on the panel as well. And yeah, it was really nice to actually speak at the event, which started my whole involvement with drug policy activism. The year before was where I met Students for Sensible Drug Policy founders, and jumped on board there. And so it was a nice sort of full circle thing to be able to come the year after and to be able to speak on that panel this time. It was a real honour.
Awesome. And you spoke today about a trip to Thailand. What was that about?
So another awesome opportunity through SSDP is that myself and Penny, our national president, were given the opportunity to go to Thailand, to Bangkok, for an international convening conference of global youth drug policy and harm reduction activists, where the point, I suppose, is to start forming a strong international network of drug policy and harm reduction organizations. So SSDP chapters and organizations from Canada and the UK and the US, harm reduction organizations from Latin America and Europe and Africa were all represented. And the hope is to have a couple more conferences over the next few years to keep developing this international network ahead of the United Nations General Assembly special session in 2019, where we'll hopefully have a really strong international youth presence to argue for drug policy reform.
That's amazing. Have you got a message out there for anyone that might be interested in getting involved in SSDP or activism more broadly?
Yeah, absolutely. If you feel that our drug wars are wrong and that they're steeped in a whole lot of oppression and that they're causing more harm than anything, really. And if you feel that in your experience and in your gut, then you should definitely get involved and add your voice to the movement, because we need all the help we can find.
So my name is Caitlin and I'm from Deakin Uni.
And how'd you get interested in SSDP?
There's a few different things. I actually read a book ages ago called Chasing the Screen. I thought like that kind of blew my mind a little bit about like how we view people that are addicts. And then I kind of got into like the criminology stuff at uni. And then Andrew Groves, who was my lecturer for criminology, he was like really passionate about like pill testing. Wrote this really good article, so I read that, and then Penny actually came and spoke at the end of one of my lectures because she knew Andrew, and then I showed my interest, and then yeah, that's how I ended up at SSDP.
Awesome. And what do you hope to get out of being involved in SSDP this year?
Just like educating people more on like what it involves, and you know, trying to change people's view a little bit. I'm actually the first person I'm trying to let is my mom to be, and she actually has changed her opinion quite a little bit with me being quite honest about my drug use and all that sort of thing. And then, yeah.
Awesome. And do you have anything you'd like to say to other people out there that might be interested in getting involved?
Yeah, just like reading a lot of articles and stuff. That's how it started me off, like getting involved. So I say do it. Like it's really worthwhile, and you meet such amazing people and really open-minded people.
For more information, check out ssdp.org.au, and you can find us on social media at ssdp Australia or on Twitter at ssdp_Australia. You're on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. This is Grouch with Soul Provider. Thank you.
Grouch, Soul Provider, on In Psychedelia, 3CR, Community Radio, 855 AM, digital and streaming at the website 3cr.org.au.
And on the air right now, we've got Kaya from Holmes Glen TAFE. I'll let you introduce what your role was with FEBFA, some campaign director or something, was it?
Yes, so I was basically the team leader for the Dandenong actual YSAS FEBFAST group a few years ago. It was an absolutely amazing experience. It was the first year that I had heard of FEBFAST, and as soon as one of the workers explained to me exactly what it was, I definitely wanted to get involved. So what my role was I went around the office, I asked everybody who was working there whether they wanted to sign up, so I had a big role in getting everybody actively on board.
And sorry, can we just go back a little bit for anyone who doesn't know, could you just explain what FEBFAST is?
Oh yes, sorry. So FEBFAST, a pause for a cause. Basically what we do is for the month of February, you have the option to give up alcohol, sugar, or something of your choice, whether it be technology or chocolate or something like that. And whilst you're giving this up for those 28 days of February, you're asking the people around you to send you a donation. And these donations all go toward YSAS. And YSAS work with disadvantaged youth who have experienced some sort of substance issue.
And how did that go organising your colleagues in the office there when you participated in FEBFAST?
It was very exciting. We had a very, very good response. I think we had a team of about 10 of us, and I'd never really done anything like that before. So what I did was I jumped on the Febfast website, which is febfast.org.au, and they had so much information of different activities that you could do to get people involved. So what we decided to do was to have a mocktail party in which we invited all of the workers and a lot of the clients to come down in the late afternoon in late February, and we had this big event where we taught people how to make mocktails. And we also had Febfast posters and signs around that gave everybody information about what Febfast does, and there was also a lot of harm reduction information in that, and that was a really, really great day.
Excellent. I think we have to wrap it up now.
We've just about run out of time, but Febfast, there is an SSDP team, and as Kaya mentioned, febfast.org.au is the website, and I think you can look up teams and then donate straight to them. We've got a little bit of time for, there's some things coming up that we wanted to mention.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on the show, Kaya.
No worries.
Yes, things coming up?
Yeah, there's next week is the 420 Cannabis Picnic happening at Flagstaff Gardens, and it will once again be a cannabis-free picnic. Matt's really trying to keep the relationship with the Victorian police as friendly as possible to show that, you know, I guess stoners and the cannabis community are just people and we can get along just fine with the police.
We also have a lot coming up for O-Week campaigns, so across many different universities across South Australia, Victoria and New South Wales. So if you're a uni student, look out for Students for Sensible Drug Policy, SSDP, resources and things floating around. Ask any questions. We'd love to have any new members we can get.
Up next on 3CR is Queering the Air, and we will be back from 2 p.m. next week. 3cr.org.au is the place to go for more information on anything we've talked about.
And just a reminder that the Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry into Drugs is open for submissions, so now is a really good time to start thinking about what you might like to say to the government about drug policy in Victoria.
Jump onto social media for more info about that, and we'll see you next week. Enjoy your Sunday arvo. See ya.
This is In Psychedelia. Comments, complaints, or contributions are welcome. Jump on the 3CR website,
3cr.org.au, and head to the In Psychedelia program page.
Get in contact with us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email. In Psychedelia does not condone or condemn people who use drugs for their choices. Our aim is to present the diverse intersections of psychoactive drugs and society. If you are concerned about your own drug use or a friend's drug use, Directline provides a free and confidential counselling service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Call 1-800-888-236.
In Psychedelia, we'll be back on 3CR from 2 p.m. next Sunday.
You've been listening to a 3CR community radio podcast of In Psychedelia. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.